Hello and welcome to episode 111. This is a bit of a special instalment, as it's a little longer and more in-depth than usual. This time around, I'm returning to the science fiction of the 1950s, the decade that Robert Silverberg described as the real golden age of SF. In particular, it's about a unique collaboration between two writers, Frederick Pohl and Cyril M. Kornbluth. They work together on a number of short stories, but their collective reputation rests mainly on their novels together. This episode focuses on three of those novels: The Space Merchants from 1952, Gladiator at Law from 1955, and Wolfbane from 1959. Each unique in their own way, these three books are classics of the genre. They're the products of a special partnership between two writers who complemented each other perfectly. Significantly, all three books were originally serialised in Galaxy magazine, which at the time was edited by H.L. Gold, who Silverberg called difficult and well-nigh impossibly demanding. In this sense, the three books represent some of the high watermarks of magazine SF in the exciting, productive 1950s. All three were also published in book form by Ballantine, then a new company which was helping to build a market for SF novels which had never existed prior to the 1950s. The partnership ended early due to the untimely death of Kornbluth in 1958. Soon afterwards, H.L. Gold stepped down from Galaxy and left Pohl to take over from him. These three novels then arrived at a time of tremendous change in the genre. In this episode, I try to do them some justice, especially Gladiator at Law and Wolfbane, which I feel deserve the classic status already afforded to The Space Merchants. Enjoy, and remember that a text version of this piece is available on andyjohnson.xyz, where you'll also find a review of Pohl's 1977 novel, Gateway. That's podcast episode 68. If you want to join the conversation, I'd love for you to make a comment on the site, and I'll be sure to reply. The Futurians were likely the most famous and important fan group in the history of science fiction. Based in New York City in the 1930s and 1940s, they included SF fans who went on to become successful writers, artists, editors, and agents in the field. Some of the most important writers in the group included Isaac Asimov, James Blish, and two men who formed possibly the most important collaboration in science fiction. That partnership was between Frederick Pohl, who lived from 1919 to 2013, and Cyril M. Kornbluth, who lived from 1923 to 1958. They worked together from 1940 until the latter's untimely death at the age of just 34. In that time, they collaborated on several short stories and four science fiction novels, of which three are considered classics. These are The Space Merchants from 1952, Gladiator at Law from 1955, and Wolfbane from 1959. This special episode takes a brisk tour through these books, each a classic 1950s SF novel in its own right, which add up to a memorable body of work. Part 1. Everything Must Go, The Space Merchants from 1952. The Space Merchants is easily one of the most important, successful, and acclaimed SF novels of the 1950s. Critic Groff Conklin called it perhaps the best science fiction satire since Brave New World. In 1960, Kingsley Amis wrote that it had, quote, many claims to being the best science fiction novel so far. In 2006, Stephen E. Andrews and Nick Renison called it a classic which had, quote, a huge impact on determining the possibilities for 1950s social SF. The Space Merchants was originally published over three issues of Galaxy Science Fiction magazine, then edited by H.L. Gold, in the summer of 1952. In May of the following year, it was released in book form by Ballantine Books, helping to establish that company as a significant player in the emerging market for SF novels. By 1978, it had sold 10 million copies in 25 languages. In the future, the United States is dominated by corporate interests. Even members of Congress are little more than spokespeople for major companies. The real power players are the advertising agencies, which manipulate markets, public opinion, and even the American space program. the puppet government is compelled to colonize Venus. An ad agency, Shock and Associates, is given a challenging task: to market the forbidding hellhole as a heroic destination for plucky volunteers to conquer. Leading this effort is star-class copywriter Mitch Courtney, who lives a fairly charmed life in New York. He assembles a team and sets about his slickest deception yet. But what begins as a career-making opportunity rapidly devolves into a disaster. During a trip to Antarctica to confront a rival, Courtney is rendered unconscious, has his identity stolen, and is cast out of his privileged life to toil as just another ordinary working stiff in the brutalized global underclass. The Space Merchants take some clear inspiration from earlier books like Brave New World and 1984, which was published just a few years earlier. Compared to Orwell, though, Pohl and Kornbluth are having much more fun. Their first collaborative novel is a fast-paced, slick satire which merges an exciting plot with clever extrapolations of 1950s concerns into a future setting. In a number of ways, the book feels ahead of its time. For example, Courtney falls in with subversive conservationists, or consies, who decry the way capitalism is despoiling the natural world. This was a decade before Rachel Carson's book Silent Spring, which first solidified an environmental movement in the United States. An environmental theme is a strikingly rare element in a 1950s SF novel. The Space Merchants also depicts a New York City reliant on cycle rickshaws in use due to a shortage of fuel. As outlandish as the book can be, it also has the ring of truth to it. This comes from both Pohl's experience as a copywriter on New York's Madison Avenue in the late 1940s and Kornbluth's days as a journalist. Even today, the acclaim for the Space Merchants seems apt. It's a very cleverly constructed, pacey story, with new details and sources of interest on every page. Pohl and Kornbluth clearly already had an effective partnership. In his landmark book, Science Fiction, The 100 Best Novels, from 1985, David Pringle suggested that the novel is, quote, a bit too slick and self-satisfied in its own wit, but also felt that, quote, no other writer has surpassed Pohl and Kornbluth's achievements in this vein. Part 2. Boardroom as Battlefield. Gladiator at Law, from 1955. The second major SF novel by Pohl and Kornbluth had a very similar publication history. Like The Space Merchants, it was also serialized over three issues of Galaxy, this time in the summer of 1954, and it was later published in book form by Ballantine. The similarities go on. Gladiator at Law is another social SF satire, set in a corporate-dominated future America. However, what begins in a familiar vein gradually takes on a unique feel of its own. In this vision of the United States, the preeminence of commercial and financial power means that corporate lawyers are some of society's most prominent figures. Charles Mundin is no such high flyer, but merely a lowly criminal lawyer, which is much less prestigious. He is struggling, to the extent that he can barely keep up the monthly payments on his sleepless secretary, a kind of barely intelligent proto-answering machine. For this reason, Mundin takes on a risky long shot, a corporate law case he's not really qualified for, but could be his route into the big leagues. He is tasked with pursuing the claim of the Lavin family, who own 25% of the stock in GML, an immensely valuable house-building corporation. The issue is that young Don Lavin has been conditioned, subjected to neurosurgery, which prevents him from recalling the location of his stock certificates. If Mundin can help recover them, he could help mount a corporate coup that could rock American capitalism to its foundations. The title of Gladiator at Law suggests that Mundin will be forced to physically fight in order to succeed. There are bloody gladiatorial struggles in the story, used to keep the masses happy and referred to as field days, but they're a minor element. The real struggle is in the boardrooms of Monmouth City, New Jersey, which has become the nation's financial capital since New York City was turned into a bombed-out ruin. Gladiator at Law is as much a legal drama as it is an SF novel, and its plot is driven by action in the boardrooms, which become battlefields in their own right. Pohl and Kornbluth make a number of fascinating extrapolations, especially on the topic of housing. GML Homes secured its dominance by building bubble homes, which evoke the machines for living in, espoused by the Swiss-French architect Le Corbusier. These houses are programmable and protean, able to change decor and layout to suit their residents' moods. They're also a powerful form of social control, accessible only to those on an employment contract with a big corporation. Those kicked out of their bubble homes are condemned to live, or at least survive, in Belly Rave, a dystopian suburban sprawl at the city's edge. The area began as a model community, but rapidly degenerated into a violent, gang-ridden, and hopeless slum. Belly Rave was inspired by the real-life Levittown, New York, where Kornbluth himself lived. The town was made up of mass-produced, racially segregated homes built for returning servicemen after World War II by Levitt and Sons, Inc. David Pringle wrote that Gladiator at Law comes close to the quality of The Space Merchants, but that it, quote, rests a notch further down the scale. Arguably, though, it's even better in some respects. This is another beautifully constructed satire, which extrapolates intriguingly on several aspects of life in America in the 1950s. It has a number of memorable sequences, such as Mundin's struggle to acquire a single share of GML stock, his encounter with the horror of Belly Rave, and the discovery of who really controls the shadowy financier's Green Charleston, of whom even the city's biggest tycoons are afraid. Part 3. A Stolen Earth, Wolfbane, from 1959. The final collaboration between Pohl and Kornbluth also began life in Galaxy, this time as a two-part serial in October and November 1957. However, it was altered greatly prior to its publication in book form by Ballantine in September 1959. Kornbluth was tasked with extending the text from 40,000 to 60,000 words. Wolfbane differs greatly from its predecessors. While The Space Merchants and Gladiator at Law are both social, satirical SF novels with strong similarities, this final collaboration strikes out in a radically different and altogether stranger direction. It's a much more imaginative, cerebral, and in some ways unsettling story. When the novel opens, it's been 250 years since the Earth was essentially stolen, removed by aliens from our solar system and cast out into interstellar space. Alien machines, known only as pyramids, have turned the moon into a makeshift sun and reignite it roughly every 5 years. In Earth's parlous state, the human population has collapsed and the survivors eke out a meagre living in the weak light of their sunlit. Clearly, this unique setting is a stark departure from Pohl and Kornbluth's earlier books. The opening chapters of Wolfbane are set in Wheeling, West Virginia, where society is bound by rigid rules, prescribed gestures, and enforced conformity. This culture has emerged in part due to the desperate shortage of food, which has refocused life on the bare necessities and has all but destroyed individuality and creative expression. Glenn Trapeal represents a classic SF trope: the unruly outsider whose aberrant behaviour is a catalyst for change. That he displays any capacity for pursuit of personal advantage marks him out as the son of the wolf and has him condemned to execution by the extraction of his cerebrospinal fluid. Inevitably, Trapeal escapes and makes contact with a community of other wolves. They conscript him into a possible suicide mission to Everest, where a single pyramid perches at the Earth's highest point. Before this can occur, though, Trapeal finds himself experiencing a very different kind of close encounter with the alien machines, one which could free humanity from bondage, but possibly at a terrible cost. It's during its second half that Wolfbane truly comes into its own. It's important, though, to leave the story's revelations to the reader. However, in general terms, the novel gradually becomes a fascinating exploration of the relationship between man and machine, and the contrast between individual and collective intelligence and experience. Wolfbane often feels ahead of its time, and it anticipates a number of later SF stories. For example, certain elements of it have striking connections with The Matrix. Indeed, the Science Fiction Encyclopedia suggests that the novel is, quote, a precursor to some of the most ambitious work of authors like Stephen Baxter and Greg Bear. Far darker and more ominous than the earlier collaborations, Wolfbane arguably deserves more attention than it's received so far. Sadly, Kornbluth did not live to see the publication of Wolfbane in book form. He died of a heart attack in March 1958, aged just 34, which Pohl suggested was a result of damage to his heart sustained during his service during the Battle of the Bulge in World War II. Pohl worked diligently to sustain and expand his friend's legacy and won a Hugo Award in 1973 for the short story The Meeting, which was based on an idea originally from Kornbluth. While Kornbluth's career was sadly short, Pohl's was extraordinarily long, and he was involved with SF for over 70 years. As the SFE puts it, quote, he took until the mid-1970s to write novels as effective as the joint efforts with his old writing partner. The peak of his career was perhaps his tremendous success with Gateway in 1977. It was a major, late breakthrough for someone who had by then been known mainly as a magazine editor and agent for many years. Today, The Space Merchants, Gladiator at Law and Wolfbane all stand up impressively well, even after over six decades. This unique partnership has a strong claim to be the greatest in all of science fiction, sadly brief as it was. Thanks for listening to this episode. You can find more of my writing in text and audio form at my site andyjohnson.xyz. You can also find me on Twitter at andyjohnsonuk, and you can support me at patreon.com/andyjohnson. Catch you next time.